How are you getting your sports fix there, Ben?
Well, I did watch that game in Taiwan this morning. It was nice to roll out of bed and have a baseball game. And I was open to being entertained by it. And then the broadcaster started talking about how overpriced all the concessions are at games in America. And I thought, these guys really are playing to the audience here. They, like, yeah, you can't get a beer and a hot dog for less than $60 over in America. But here, you know, we let people bring stuff in. And I'm thinking, man, they are really on top of their game here. I mean, they must have known all the American viewers were starting to stream as they woke up. That was well played by those gentlemen.
I believe so. And you got to see the monkey's bullpen fly apart.
Yeah, I actually tuned out before then, so I didn't. It was like 9-6 in like the fourth inning when I turned it on, or something like crazy like that. And then apparently there was some big comeback, but I had lost interest by then. I will admit.
So it's just like old times, like you're watching American baseball.
I was asleep in the chair. Yeah, during the cratering bullpen sounded familiar, and the home and a bunch of home runs sounded quite familiar. So maybe it sounds like it's modern day baseball.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closets by Design and the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, and that was the voice. You're welcoming him back right now. That's hard to say. We're welcoming him back right now. We're still in quarantine. That's St. Louis Post-Dispatch sports columnist Ben Fredrickson. Ben, thanks for joining me at a distance across state lines.
You bet, man. Yeah, doing well, and good to hear your voice. Hope everything's going well.
Did watching the baseball game? Oh, everything's going well. Thanks, and I hope you're healthy too.
I'm good. Yeah, so far so good. Everybody in the family's doing okay, and that's the most important thing. So
I'm jealous of your haircut.
I thought you would do the same thing.
I would eagerly do it. This is the longest I've ever gone without a haircut. With the exception of when I, you know, was an expat, you know, gallivanting around Great Britain, pretending to be studying abroad. I don't have clippers. I feel like really like I messed up.
Clippers.
I don't know.
You rock like a buzz cut for like years upon years, and you never had clippers?
Yeah, I know. Well, yeah, we just don't have them now, so I don't know what happened to. I don't know. I don't know. It's embarrassing.
You should check out this thing called Amazon.
Yeah, no, I think I can get clippers delivered by June. So that'll be good. That'll be great. Did watching the baseball game, did that reinforce missing sport? Did that say, oh, okay, well, hey, it's there? I mean, how did you come out of watching the baseball game in the morning thinking, man, now I remember why I missed it and why I have missed it for more than a month now.
Yeah, to some degree, yeah, it was nice to turn on the game and not know what was going to happen. But I'll be honest, like 8 o'clock in the morning is not like my prime sports watching mode. I was like needing coffee and also had some interviews I needed to do, so I was distracted. So I wasn't exactly like settling in at night ready to watch this game. So that was a curveball of sorts, but I do think, just judging by the reaction that I saw and having a chance to tune in and see something that was unpredictable, that it did remind me like, oh yeah, this is what it's like to watch a pitcher warm up before an inning that we don't know what's going to happen. And that's what I think we're going to miss more and more, is just the, you know, it's great to revisit the old games and we can, you know, certainly go back to games that deserve to be revisited. And these are fun things to do, but there's no unknown. There's no suspense. And that's, I think, what we're missing.
Oh, absolutely. The sustained tension that sports brings. I actually like morning sports. That's one of the reasons why soccer fits into my sweet spot so much, because you can, like, Saturday, Sunday, turn on the EPL and watch games. I actually kind of like it. Has watching the game with mannequins and cutouts in the stands at all shaped or strengthened the opinion that we discussed the last time you were on the podcast, this notion of playing in front of empty crowds?
Well, I just haven't given that much more thought because I think that's going to be exactly what happens. Is it ideal? No. Is it the same? No. Is it better than nothing? Yeah, I think it will be, especially when we know the players and fans can watch their teams. I mean, it's a little different to tune in to a game that you've never seen the two teams play before. I don't want people to have that same sort of attraction. But if it's, you know, if it's Clayton Kershaw going against somebody, then yeah, you're probably more likely to watch no matter who's in the stands. I think especially viewing on TV, how many times are you really, you know, moved or paying that much attention to what's happening in the stands in general? I mean, it's clearly it's an environment changer when you're at the ballpark, but you know, crowd noise and all those things. What I'm most curious about is what like Major League Baseball might do to replicate or work around the kind of the quietness, the static of an empty ballpark. And, you know, maybe it's putting up robot fans. I don't know if they will do that, but I've talked about this with Dan McLaughlin, so I'm like, why not let players pick like a playlist?
Yeah, that's a Old Wong's idea. Yeah. Old Wong was advocating that same thing.
I think having like letting each guy not just a walk up song, but like figure out how many, you know, let each guy pick an inning's worth of songs. You know, or maybe the winning team, the team that's ahead, gets to control the playlist. I mean, there's all different kinds of things you could do, and I'm sure there's copyright considerations and all that stuff that would have to be taken into consideration. But I think there are things you can do to make it fun without it just being crickets.
Yeah. I mean, I get what you're saying. But I do notice like empty seats. I do notice like the lack of crowd noise when I'm watching these games. I do notice it. And it gives off a haunting vibe at times, and so it's like if baseball is being played in the forest and no one is there to watch it, did it really happen? I mean, it's there on the TV, we see it, but some of the watching some of them when like a guy hits a home run and you know there's not gonna be hands reaching out to catch it, that was a different visual for me. I mean, that was it's batting practice.
No, it's definitely different. I mean, it's like watching the Marlins play, which few people do. But I'm serious. Like, you don't watch when you grew up watching baseball. Like, you didn't watch baseball because you wanted to see the people in the stands. You watched it because you wanted to see baseball. I mean, it's not comparable in terms of it's not bad. It's not going to be better than having baseball back like it will be or like it, you know, like we knew it before. And I think we'll know it again. But the question is not if this can match it, if it's better than the alternative, which is no baseball of any kind. Right. So I think that's
still struggling.
I mean, I think if you asked, if you asked 10 baseball fans, do they want games without people in the stands and some quirks versus nothing? I think 8, probably 9 of them would say, absolutely, give it to me yesterday.
Sure. Well, you wrote this past week about some encouraging news from Washington Nationals superfan Dr. Fauci, who has become something of a TV star due to these daily briefings from the White House. I want to ask you about that and sort of get the rundown on that and what your feelings of that. But first, I want to tell people about our sponsor, Closets by Design. Imagine your home totally organized. Closets by Design specializes in custom closets, pantries, laundry rooms, garages, and more. Now get 40% plus an additional 15% off. That's Closets by Design, 314-733-9855. Closets by Design of St. Louis, the official sponsor of the weekly best podcast in baseball. Ben, can you take us through sort of what you heard in Dr. Fauci's interview and why that maybe gave you such optimism? I mean, is optimism the right word for it?
Sure, I'll be optimistic when the nation's leading infectious disease expert says, "Hey, I can see there being a path back toward having pro sports." I've said all along, and you and I have talked about this, and I think we're in agreement. Like, this is really going to come down to not what Major League Baseball wants, or not what not what we want. It's going to come down to what the people who are making these decisions at a national level think is okay, and it's going to come down
to the virus.
And our response to science and how this thing spreads. And
right.
when a guy right. top of it more than anybody says, yeah, there's a path back here, then I think that is something to celebrate. I put a lot more stock into what he says than, you know, what someone on ESPN is spouting off about, or what these random predictions are, from people who are not in those meetings. So I think that's encouraging when he says, yeah, I think we can get to a point with testing, depending on what players agree with, where these games can be played and broadcast in a way that gives people something to watch. Yeah, there are a lot of things that have to be sorted out. I mean, guys have to know what they're getting into. They have to agree to probably some very strict things that they might not feel comfortable with. And if they're not, then it's a non-starter. But just to hear him say that, I think we can get to a point where we can have managed gatherings big enough to have these games without the attendance at first, I think that is an encouraging sign. And it's not just some guy saying it, you know, on around the horn. It's a guy saying it who's in those meetings and talking to those doctors and has been really the guy running point, no pun intended, because I think he used to be a point guard when he played basketball.
Yeah.
We were handling this, so I think that is good news.
What in your mind's eye, when he's describing the return of sports, what do you see?
Well, it would probably be, you know, players agreeing to pretty significant and, you know, high scale testing, some sort of self-imposed quarantine. You know, that we've seen these ideas about what could happen, you know, with every team in Arizona versus kind of reorganizing the Grapefruit League and the Cactus Leagues. That makes the most the doing that, the second plan, makes the most sense to me. I mean, having guys in Arizona and Florida treating the Grapefruit League and the Cactus Leagues as the AL and the NL for one shortened season and realigning the divisions. And that way you can have guys kind of in their home away from homes. Most of those guys, not all of them, but most of them have some sort of more permanent living situations. And that would probably be more agreeable to them as opposed to being quarantined in some hotel in Arizona with everybody. The question will be, what will the players agree with? And also, you know, what will the plan be for what happens if someone tests positive? I mean, you can't really enter a season and say, well, this is going to work until someone gets coronavirus and then we have to shut everything down. That's not a realistic way to plan this. So what kind of testing can be done to, you know, and the tests are being improved regularly. If they're faster, they're able to catch it sooner. You know, they're, I think, decreasing that amount of time between when someone has it and when they're showing symptoms. And that's huge, because you can right now you can have it and be contagious before you show symptoms, which is very problematic when you're talking about trying to keep a full roster of players from getting it. So I think figuring out the best testing they can have, and also what guys will agree to, it's a pretty invasive process. Then the other question would be, when is it kind of worth the calculated risk of trying to launch this thing? And by that, I mean calculated risk of doing it too soon and having to shut it down, and also calculated risk of, you know, the greater health. I mean, I don't think anyone is saying, you know, what frustrates me about this whole conversation is that there seems to be, as there is with everything in our country, these two sides, where one side says we can't possibly talk about doing anything until there's a vaccine, and another side that says we need to be back to normal now. Well, the truth is neither. It's going to be this rolling timeline that Fauci has talked about, where we have to decide based off of an area, based off of the technology we have, based off of the most recent, you know, what the cases are telling us, of when it's worth the calculated risk of trying to put some things in motion. And it doesn't mean you don't care about people getting sick.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that you value the economy over lives. And it also doesn't mean that you're not thinking about the public good, but it's everything we do is a balancing act. I mean, if we didn't do that, then we would never do anything, period. So I think
the return to normalcy is an inverse curve to the virus curve, that, you know, as we hit the downslope as a culture and as a country of infections and deaths because of COVID-19, that then you will see the related uptick toward normalcy and eventually back to the peak. I mean, and the economy will do the same way. If a virus comes in a wave or a curve, as we talk about it, if it comes in a curve, then so too will the return to normalcy. That makes sense.
Well, and the other thing that's going to be huge here will be the, you know, us figuring out where in the discussion sports should be. Should we be talking about bringing sports back before other things come back? And where does sports fit in this kind of national priority list? And, you know, people aren't going to probably agree on that. But one thing that we've always done is kind of turn towards sports as a way of kind of pulling ourselves up from our bootstraps and, you know, and having a sense of community and a distraction / entertainment. And there's a valid point there. The other thing I would point out is that there are a lot of powerful people who are going to lobby on the behalf of sports. We've seen that with the comments has made. We see that in state governments all the time, lobbyists and people who pull for certain benefits to sports. And it might not always be right, but the thing is a lot of powerful people are going to be pushing for this to be high up on the list of things that come back.
Well, and the broadcast, you know, I mean, that it'll be part of, it'll be huge. It'll be not only the, you know, not only the governments and the politicians, but it'll also be, you know, the broadcast entities, the entertainment industry pushing for it, because, you know, it's entirely possible that outside of news, the only live programming that is possible and thus will generate advertising revenue and also captivate eyes is going to be sports. And, you know, it used to talk about sports being, you know, these rights holder fees being so massive because sports was DVR proof, right? Like it was appointment viewing. It was, you know, it wasn't like you could binge a baseball season. I mean, I guess you could, but you have to wait till the end. You couldn't record a baseball game at your whim, you know, and watch it earlier or watch it over the weekend without knowing what happened or things like that, right? So they would talk about how it was DVR proof, and because of that, advertisers were interested. Because of that, ratings were predictable. Because of that, subscription fees were a big part of it because cable providers wanted real-time live coverage that would avoid the streaming because they could put commercials with it. And so sports fit all of these categories, and sports knew it, and so they could charge a really high rate. Well, now they're going to want return on that in some way, somehow, some form, because, you know, I mean, look, this is going to have some real catastrophic repercussions for smaller baseball teams. And it's also going to change the finances, I would imagine, of sports because there isn't revenue coming in. I mean, you're talking about two major sports in basketball and hockey, and maybe even particularly hockey, that might have zero revenue, incoming revenue for their playoffs. That's bonkers. That's gonna hurt. At some point in time, that pinch will arrive.
Well, it's going to happen in hockey in the next year's salary cap. I mean, they're going to lose, 20% of their potential revenue by not having a postseason if they don't get one off the ground. And that's automatically going to affect teams not having as much money to sign players next year. I mean, players are going to – they split that pretty much 50-50 in hockey. And that's really going to – they're going to have some guys feeling the pinch very soon if they don't get up and going. So – that is going to be the motivating factor. And even for college sports, which makes a lot of revenue based off of tickets and attendance, they still make more off of getting games on TV. And I think that is where we're going to see this conversation really take off, because already programs are cutting certain sports, you know, men's sports that aren't popular, that don't make money. Pretty soon I'll be pleased to cut Title IX sports for programs that aren't making money. We've already seen some of the lower level conferences ask for certain wiggle rooms in terms of meeting scheduling requirements, in terms of wanting to stay part of, you know, big time college football, but not doing the things that are supposed to be required of it. We're going to have a conversation about what the pay structure looks like in college sports. I mean, you've got big time coaches taking voluntary pay cuts. You know, you're going to have conversations about, well, how did college sports not have any money left in the tank, in the reserves, when they make money hand over hand every year, and now there's been one threatened football season, everybody's crying poor. I mean, there's going to be some hard conversations that are had at a lot of different levels.
Yeah. One of the harder conversations, and maybe I hope I don't come off like a jerk asking this, but I probably will. That's fine. Is this notion of if sports return, particularly baseball, that it will have to have robust testing? We see that in the leagues overseas. I mean, you saw the descriptions of what, say, the KBO is going to do, where players are going to be tested twice a day, and there is going to be this strenuous testing that they have to go through. If you're talking about baseball in a bubble, say in Phoenix, then you're likely talking about 1,200 players. If you're talking about 1,200 players getting tested twice a day, I mean, 2,400 tests a day, you know, over a week. I mean, that's a lot of tests. You know, that's 16,000, almost 17,000 tests. And that's before you talk about staff and coaches and managers and trainers, and if they allow the media in, and media. When we're talking about a nation at whole that has less than 2% of its citizens tested, is that the best use of tests?
Oh, I think that's a totally fair question. And, you know, the answer is pretty much no across the board. However, the best
20,000 tests a week. Right.
But look, we're talking about a country that found all these tests for NBA, entire NBA rosters, when there was apparently a critical shortage in our country. These things happen in the United States of America, and this will not change that. So I'm not arguing, you know, you're not going to have me argue that it's right. It's not. But does that mean that it won't happen? No, it will happen. I mean, certain
it
people.
Just adds to my skin crawl, though. I mean, you're out there covering baseball, and it's like, oh well, you know. I guess the question is that the price of admission that citizens are willing to pay, because it's not just their cable fees and their subscription fees and their time. It's like, okay, we also think the tests are important so that we have baseball. It's just part of the payment.
Well, I mean, maybe in a perfect world, it would be up to a vote, right?
Yeah. Right.
This won't be. The other thing worth mentioning too, though, is as we continue to know what we're testing for, and as we're producing more, I think there will be more and more tests made, right? I mean, as this timeline grows, tests are not going to be in such a short supply because people are churning them out, you know, left and right. Now, is it right that someone in, you know, in a different city who's not a major league baseball player can need a test and not be able to get one because they don't have health insurance, or not be able to, or too scared to of what the cost could be if they go in? Is that right? No, it's not right. Does that person have a harder time getting anything more than a major league baseball player? Yes. And that's just the way it works. It's not right. And it shouldn't be that way, yet it is. And I don't think this is going to be the moment that changes that conversation. But you're right. The optics of what this means is part of that timeline, I think. And that's what not just how can we do this to protect the players, how can we do this to not throw a wrench in it? It's also, when is it right? And when does it send the correct message as, hey, we're getting our sports going again. This is something we can all rally around, versus, hey, we're ramming sports through because we want to make money and we don't give a damn about anybody else. That's not the message that needs to be sent. And that's going to be something that the people who are making some of these calls, and that's probably more when the Rob Manfreds and the Roger Goodells and all these other people are going to have more say in it. It's not necessarily when can you launch. It's when is it right to launch? And there are going to be some people who have to think long and hard about those decisions.
So in this case, we've got a chance to catch up with a handful of players, just trying to ask them not just about when they think they'll play, because, again, they don't know. They're hearing the same reports that we are, and they know that the union is in those discussions. But so much of it is actual brainstorming and not actual proposals. It's basically a case where baseball has to be ready the moment they're told it's okay to go, so they can't just start coming up with ideas that moment. They have to be ready to mobilize at that point. But I talked to a bunch of them about like what they're doing, and you know, there are a number of interesting things. You know, Matt Carpenter talked about how social distancing is just part of his off season because he goes off to his ranch. He's got his family there at his ranch in Texas, Frozen Rope Ranch, and you know, they live pretty close to a high school where there's a full turf field, so he's been able to go there and work out. I talked to Paul Goldschmidt. You know, he has moved to Jupiter, Florida, moved this past off season, and just assumed that he would do his workouts at the ballpark facility. Well, that is the workout facility there is effectively closed. So that's not possible. So he's had to kind of get online and quickly order a home gym so that he could set that up in his garage. But he described what it's like going to the ballpark now, because he's going for treatment and for strengthening and for preventative work for the elbow soreness that he had during spring training. And he described it a lot like Colton Wong did, where, you know, they're not allowed to go in groups. It's basically one player, one trainer, one player, one player. They schedule it so that they are not overlapping. When they arrive, they're given, you know, they have their temperature tested. They go through a bit of an exam even before being allowed in. And then when they're in there, it's one-on-one and that's it. And then, you know, they leave and it's a couple times a week. And it's just, it's an interesting thing. Like the links, obviously, you know, they got to go to get treatment, and, you know, Miles Michaelis has made progress on his throwing program. But he's got to get checked too, because there are medical reasons for him to get checked and to see how long his recovery. And so it's the same kind of thing, right? And you think of the links they have to go to for that one-on-one attention, for that, you know, daily attention now, and how does that translate to, or how quickly could that, you know, scale up for an entire team under quarantine? It just, I don't know. You know, maybe it is 2 months away, maybe it is 3 months away, and that helps our vision a little bit clearer, but just what they go through today and how you see that applying to, say, baseball in a bubble is kind of hard to compute.
Yeah, you're right. And the only way I can think in my head of it working is if, you know, instead of having guys like in the situation the Cardinals have now, which is every team, you have players coming in and out of the bubble daily, right?
And
the complex is the bubble. And I think the only way this really works, probably, and maybe it doesn't work, I mean, who knows if it will actually work, but is that you expand the bubble to include you wake up in the bubble, you go to sleep in the bubble, and that way there's less risk of there's less risk of you getting it from the outside. Now, the question is, how big does that bubble get? And does the bubble mean you're in a hotel in Arizona that is connected to the stadium and that you can't, you know, you literally eat, sleep, breathe, playing Major League Baseball in this weird warped season? Or does the bubble include, hey, you can have your family with you? Is that fair to your family to ask them to come and sign up for that? Is that even going to be allowed? I mean, those are the conversations that we really haven't seen much discussion on, but I think where the discussion is going to be is the fine details as to what this looks like. If they decide to do this where everybody has to be in a hotel, what about the guys who say no thanks? I can't speak for Adam Wainwright and won't try to, but I wonder what he would think about that with his family, you know?
That's fair.
Or guys who have made enough money where they don't feel like they want to do that, or guys who are on the edge where they feel like they can't be away from their family. I mean, these are fascinating hypotheticals that, for as much as we've seen about, oh, they could, you know, have the players sit in the stands and practice social distancing in the stands to set a good message, which that's ridiculous. But we've seen all these theories about that, but we haven't seen anything about what players would actually be willing to part with in order to play games. So that to me is going to be the big thing. Is what are players?
I've yet to understand how a team can be in quarantine at a hotel and not sit by each other in a dugout.
Well, the thinking behind it was going to be that they would be, you know, sending a good message. But you're right. I mean, you can't socially distance during a baseball game. Every slide.
You can't selectively social distance.
Right, exactly. I mean,
people would see through the veneer of that, of the optics, and go, wait a minute, there are three guys standing at first base right now, and then they're, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I get it. It's a lot of ideas being thrown out there, but they do have to think about, like, just the message that they're sending, that either the media or the fans, we're not that ignorant. We can pick up when something is for show and when something is legit. And the more things you do for show, the less comfortable it feels.
Yeah, you can't give high fives, but a pitcher can lick his hand and then throw the baseball. Come on.
Right. Yeah.
So I think you drop that silliness and you really focus on trying to keep your players distance from the threat of the virus.
Right.
Again, the tricky stuff is going to be, what will they agree to?
Yeah, it's like putting all the entertainers in a snow globe and shaking it up for our entertainment. But whatever. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, and they might say no. You know, they might say we don't want to do this. But you know, the power of the dollar and getting paid more than their stipend that they've been advanced by the league is going to be. There are going to be just as many players who want to do it as there will be guys who don't. The question.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do
right.
they?
And then some guys may get a chance that they never had to be in the majors, or wonder if their chances are fleeting. They're going to have to make some tough calls.
You know, Mike, you should mention, and I don't know what these are, but there's really two dates that fascinate me. One is when does baseball have to be up and running in some way, shape, or form to justify a season? There's got to be a date in someone's mind, in Rob Manfred's head. And the other one would be, at what point do they have to commit to one of these drastically altered approaches with full commitment, not something they can change or relax as time went on, where you agree to the rules and you set them and run with them. There has to be probably a launch point where they need to have a commitment as to what this year looks like, and without being able to change it as it goes.
Yeah, I mean, I guess one determining factor would be if there's a date that, or a length of games lost, that then triggers a premium, right? Like an insurance premium.
Right.
That would set the one day, because business would discern everything. So like teams that, and I don't know how these, I'll be honest, I am ignorant in this. I don't know how these catastrophic, or some of the policies that cover teams for extended loss of revenue or things like that. I don't know how they apply, or if they apply at all to a pandemic, or if anybody thought to apply them. But, you know, they're an insurance policy, and insurance policies often operate with, hey, there's a minimum day, like, say, for an injury, right? For some injuries, it'd be like, okay, you're on the 60-day DL, so, or 60-day IL, so it'd be 60 days, and then at which point in time, then beyond that, insurance covers a certain portion of the salary. So you could see how that would play into it, business models would play into it, and what they have covered would play into it. Even probably more so, or what their TV partners are willing to put up with. And right now, it seems like they're willing to put up with anything. I mean, look, people are betting on this MLB The Show tournament, and you know, there's live streaming coverage of that. It sure sounds like a real smart move for any of the sports networks would be to pick up these games from, you know, that we're watching in the morning, that we talked about doing. That seems like a real savvy move. So clearly there's a hunger, you know, if there's a hunger to bet on sports, then there's a hunger to watch sports. And if they're betting on these video game tournaments being played by players, then you can bet that, you know, somebody's going to broadcast them. And eventually you saw that the Mets at one point in time had their broadcast crew call a video game, you know, between the Mets and the Astros as if it were a game. So there's obviously TV companies thirsty for content, and they're willing to get creative now to do it. I would imagine they'll get creative with the schedule, and that will be the other influence. This was first base week for us, right? We both caught up with a series of first basemen, right? I talked to Carpenter and Goldschmidt, and also had some time talking with John Nagowski. So all either current or former first baseman. And you caught up with Luke Voit, Yankee slugger, DH, first baseman. Did you guys talk about how he got to go to London and the Cardinals won't, or was there something more substantive?
No, he's looking forward to seeing the Cardinals this season, and now he wonders if he will.
Right after All-Star.
A little bit about London, and you know, he thought that was a fun time, and he's, you know, Luke is funny. He's hasn't changed a bit. He's very much salt of the earth Luke. But I had interviewed him, actually. That interview was starting to get a little dusty. I'd actually talked to him a while back, and things just kept popping up. I kept pushing it back, and finally had time to get to it. But he is, you know, basically going crazy, like a lot of us are. And he's out in his backyard doing all kinds of planting projects. And this is really the most time he's spent in his house with his wife since they bought it, because usually they're moving three times a year. So he's, you know, I was curious to talk to him because this is a big year for him. It was supposed to be, you know, his final season before he's arbitration eligible. And he played more than he had in the past last season, but he was also slowed by a couple injuries. So he was really feeling good about his chance to make some hay this year. And now all of a sudden, you know, here comes this coronavirus shutdown. So he's very excited about this book that he has coming out, which is going to help raise some money for first responders and military families.
Yeah, tell me about
that. Luke's Baseball Story. It's a kid's book that's kind of – it's based about Luke's – kind of the lessons Luke learned in his childhood and what he hopes, you know, to have – to what he hopes kids should hear. So he has been doing some appearances – had been doing some appearances – last season in New York at some schools around the stadium to kind of just hang out with kids, read to them. And he kind of decided he wanted to have something more personal to read. So he teamed up with a writer and they produced this kid's book about, you know, the lessons Luke learned as a kid, basically when he was, you know, growing up, you know, competing with his brother every day. So that's supposed to be out soon. And he was planning a whole, you know, event of kind of touring some of the schools around and handing out copies and stuff like that. That's all, of course, been delayed. So he's ready to get that going. He's ready to get baseball going. He's you know, still living the dream there in New York, but he didn't see this part coming.
Do you look at that trade differently at all than when it happened or 12 months ago?
Absolutely. I mean, you have to. I think because flip the names in it. If the Cardinals had said they traded Luke Voit for Giovanni Gallegos and threw in Chase and Strieve as opposed to the vice versa, then they would look. I think a lot of people forget that that's where Giovanni Gallegos came from.
Right.
So one of the most reliable relievers in the National League. I don't know if that's exactly how the Cardinals planned on it working out, but I think they were, especially after they got Goldschmidt, I think they were okay with that swap.
Well, that's the thing is, like, if that trade with the Yankees didn't happen, then the Cardinals don't get the lefty that they desperately needed at that moment, regardless of how the performance went. But they really did need that lefty because Brett Cecil wasn't working out. It was another example of the cascade effect of Brett Cecil not being around or not being effective, either due to injury or just, like I said, ineffectiveness. You know, that trade was part of that, trying to solve that opening there, just as later on, signing Andrew Miller was part of solving that opening. So if they don't make that trade, then they don't have the lefty. If they don't make that trade, they keep Luke Voit. But that doesn't stop them from trading for Goldschmidt, because then either Luke Voit is part of that deal or they have some kind of redundancy there. That's the one thing is, like, having Luke Voit as their first baseman was not going to stop them from an opportunity to add Paul Goldschmidt. So there was really going to be no spot for Voit.
It would have depended on how Voit hit in that time.
Yeah.
Didn't really get a chance to prove that he could be that guy.
But I don't think there was anything that he could have done where they would have said, yeah, let's walk away from this chance to get an MVP caliber player.
Well, I think that it would have, again, depended. The Cardinals have oftentimes plugged a guy in a spot and then been pretty pleased with what they found there. I mean, I don't think I think it's unfair to say that, because we don't really know what he would have done if given that chance. I mean, he played 62 games, what, for the Cardinals in 17 and 8 in 8.
Yeah.
I mean, and then look at some of what he did when given an opportunity in New York. I'm not saying Voit is Goldschmidt. I'm saying that he might have convinced the Cardinals they didn't need to go pursue a first baseman for a while.
I disagree. I mean, and that's just me, because I saw it happen too often with John Jay, or we saw it with Tommy Pham a few times, where they go out and they do exactly what they're asked. And then come the winter, the Cardinals find reasons to go out and find somebody else, or try to find somebody to compliment or somebody to compete. And in this case, I mean, they just had rarely ever had a chance to go get a guy who was MVP caliber. I just don't think that, and that's not anything against Luke. Luke could have gone gangbusters. It just would have been a case where the Cardinals would be like, that's fantastic for him, but we can go out and get a name brand MVP guy that we rarely have a chance at getting. I'm just speaking to, like, the circumstance. I saw it over and over again where guys would have strong finishes, whether, again, it would be Jay or you know, I don't know how many different times we saw Tommy Pham not get a chance after performing well, until he finally did, and then he struggled.
I mean, if things would have been played differently, then maybe Voit would have gotten a chance as opposed to trying to turn Jose Martinez into a first baseman or, you know.
Yeah, that's fair.
Or there. Again, it depends on how back you go. A, if this alternate option would have happened, how much more time could he have had to prove himself? I don't know. I mean, I think it's tough to say this is what the Cardinals would have done when we don't know what Voit would have done.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I did talk to the Cardinals' current first baseman, who would be right now in his first year of the franchise record extension that he signed. And, you know, he has found a creative way. So he and Matt Carpenter talked about this virtual reality thing. From Win Reality, that's capital W, capital I, capital N, and then Reality, this Austin-based company. And it's another one of these, like, tech twists that is really encroached in on baseball. But this one, you know, it adds the added element of taking real data and then putting it in this three-dimensional kind of training simulator, like kind of like a flight simulator for hitters. And, you know, Goldschmidt shared with me, like, sort of how it looks in his office. And, you know, it's just, he goes into his home office, he can knock out 10, 50 at bats, he can relive at bats with this headset on, just like playing a video game. And, you know, he said it's been helpful, and it's something that he's going to incorporate into his, or he incorporated it into his daily routine, not so much to test himself, but kind of to test the software and see how realistic it was. And now he's sold on it, and he wants to take it into the season and see what it's like to have that in his hotel room to prepare for games. I think how guys are staying sharp at this time is fascinating, because you have guys who are trying to go all in on this tech or try to find this technology that helps them. And it's like, it's tech that is helping them train at social distance. And I think, you know, you and I talked, and you wrote a story about how teams will find edges at this time. I also think it's interesting how players will find edges, and, you know, the difference of availability. Like, you know, Paul Goldschmidt has the access to this thing, and so does Matt Carpenter. And then you talk to, you know, some minor leaguers, they don't really have the access to that thing. So they're creating situations as best they can where they might not be seeing live pitching. But I've talked to a few guys who are like, well, you know what, though? I can use this time to work on a position that I haven't played before. I may not get game speed reps, but I can start doing workouts at it and become familiar with it, because if I want to get to the majors, I'm going to have to be more versatile than I am, and I got time. You know, there's Joe Kelly started trending on Twitter because he shattered a window, you know, because he was working on a changeup. Yeah. So you see different things where, you know, the players are trying to make the most of this time away without the toll of games. You know, and every guy I talk to has mentioned the importance of trying to stay on their feet, because they know that they won't have a whole lot of time to get ready if there is a season. And one of the real things that is tricky that they get out of the way in spring training is the idea of being on their feet 5-6 hours a day, just standing up. And that, like Cole Wong talked about this, some of the minor leaguers I've talked to talked about it. They're like, they need to be aware of staying on their feet, and not surrendering to the streaming services and the couch.
That's a really great point. That's hard to jump out of that back into a setting where you're asked to, you know, go through summer training or whatever we're going to call this thing. Kind of like
Camp 2.0.
Right. It's kind of like what all of us are doing, right? Like my dad is learning how to do Zoom. We've got Rick Hummel doing Zoom interviews, and everybody has probably learned something during this time. I mean, here's an example how you're recording this podcast. You're using, you know, a technology that we hadn't used before. Everybody probably learned something or been forced to adapt in some way. And ball players are no different. I mean, there will be, and that's really the way it should be pitched to them, is there will be guys who come out of this better for the way they do this. And they're just, you can't have anything like this that doesn't create some sort of a competition, whether it's teams or players. And somebody will be in a better spot maybe not a better spot than where things ended, but a better spot than others compared to how they came out of it. And same can be true for players. I've been watching, Colton's been great. He's not only finding things to do, but he's been streaming them. I think through his Instagram where he's trying to let other ball players know about him. Drills and trying to invite people to pick them up if they think they can help, which I think is really cool.
Colton has really quiz like coaches on things as to where to get some input and obviously put them kind of self-isolation twists on them. He was in talking with him, he was really searching for how can infielders who have to work together to get better work apart and still get better? And he was searching for answers to that question, which I think was fascinating. The other exercise this past week was the attempt that I made, because like you said, we're learning to do different things. So trying to get creative with our coverage as well. And I made a pitch to our editors about this interactive thing I wanted to do for online. It was, you saw all those lineups going around. I know Jack Flaherty was involved in, kind of riffing on what his all-time rotation would be, or if he needed one game, to win, to save your life or whatever, what would your lineup be? I wanted to put a Cardinal twist on it. And, the Cardinals have 11 World Series championships. They actually have 12, but they're not counting the 1886 one. So the 11 World Series championships since they joined the NL. And I thought you could put together a lineup from that. It's 11, magic number, right? I mean, that gives you 8 starting position players, a starting pitcher, a setup guy, and a closer. Pretty simple, just like you would use in a game that you had to win. But here's the twist, is you had to have every position covered, and you could only have the World Series represented once. So all 11 World Series championship teams had to be represented. Every position had to be represented. No overlaps. And that was the pitch. They said, good, put it together for Sunday. Tell us who your team is. And I'm like, well, about that. Because, when I did it, it's not going to have Bob Gibson. And they're like, all the better. Let's get people talking. So I did that, and you had issues with it.
No, I'm just curious. I mean, you made it very hard on yourself by not allowing.
How long have you known me?
by not allowing any overlaps. That's really tough. And I had a couple. Actually, I wanted to pick one person to explain how they. Yeah, you should. Go ahead and read it for folks who haven't seen it.
All right. Yeah. So for people who didn't see it, this is the one I came up with. And it's Dizzy Dean, 1934, is the starting pitcher. If it weren't for Bob Gibson, Dizzy Dean's 34 season would be the benchmark for great Cardinal pitching. But then Bob Gibson came along and was otherworldly for a decade. It's just that his best seasons didn't line up with championship seasons. And I found that over and over and over again. Roger Hornsby's triple crown, Joe Medwick's triple crown, Stan Musial's amazing 1948 season. They just didn't line up with championships. So Dizzy Dean, 34, is the starting pitcher. Tim McCarver, 67, is the catcher. Pujols, 6, is the first baseman. Hornsby, 26, is the second baseman. Ken Boyer, 64, is the third baseman. Ozzie Smith, 1982, at shortstop. Left field is Musial, 46, a remarkable season, so that's probably a given for a lot of people. Johnny Hopp, 44, is the center fielder. Enos Slaughter, one of the best postseason performers of all time for the Cardinals, chimes in with the 42 season in right field. Relief pitcher Bill Hallahan from 31, and then you have, and this one took people by surprise, I would imagine, Fernando Salas as the closer. From 2011.
Very, very well done. And I don't argue with you about things. Of course I do. But I did want to pick, just for the sake of conversation, I did want to pick one person that I wanted an explanation on. And I was going to pick Jim Edmonds, but that doesn't really count because it's like, okay, what are you going to do? Albert Pujols, right?
Right.
What about Lou Brock? Because Lou Brock, hold on a second, because Lou Brock in playoff games with the Cardinals has a .391 average, .424 on base percentage, and a .655 slugging percentage. And he was also he was also pretty good in World Series. So if you're picking championship teams, why not give weighted performance to what the guy did in the postseason?
It's a great question, and it's one I wrestled with. And you have to, and as part of the package in Sunday, which people can still find at stltoday.com, you know, it was one of the questions I got most often as I kind of worked through and talked with friends about this, and even like asked them to try to do the same thing to see how many different lineups, because it's not much of a conversation piece if everybody ends up with the same lineup, right?
Right.
And their point was, what if you were to try to do an all October thing, because then Gibson would definitely be the starter, absolutely. And you could probably go, you know, Wainwright maybe as the closer, David Freese becomes the third baseman, and yes, then Lou Brock emerges as the left fielder. The issue becomes, what do you do with Musial?
Do you
have an all-time, all-championship Cardinal team without Musial? Because if you go all October, or if you wait October, which is fine, do a weighted approach with October, then you have to be ready to not include Sam Musial. You probably have to be ready not to include Rogers Hornsby.
I've got an answer.
Okay.
And it will bring many people to my side. Add a DH.
But you mean take away the relief pitcher and put a DH?
Yeah, that's fine.
Well, that makes it easy.
No, come on. You gotta. This is for our pro DH. This is for my pro DH argument.
Also, can I remind you that they won these 11 championships in the era that there was a DH?
Thank you.
No DH in the NL. No DH.
How many they would have won if there was one? That's
11. They would have won 11.
Would have won twice as many.
No, they would have won 11. Hey, I want to close here. And this
I have another question. Have you heard from Bob Gibson yet?
I have not. No.
Okay. All right. I just can't wait till the next time that I hope the season starts soon and he's here, because I'm just gonna ask him if he saw it.
Yeah. No. That'd be great. He'll probably say the same thing to me that he always does. They still pay you to write? Why? And I say no. Now they have me podcast. This dovetails with your thought, right? I mean, like, look, I didn't put a DH because the Cardinals won those 11 championships since they joined the National League. Being in the National League is part of the Cardinals brand. I mean, you know, they have the most World Series championships in the National League. They get to claim, you know, some sort of peer group with the Yankees because of that. If they're in the American League, or if the leagues merge, or if the more that line of demarcation fades and blurs and is wiped out, then the less, you know, part of that claim the Cardinals have, you know, and I think that's important to them, being a National League town, being a National League team, and having the most World Series championships in the National League. You know, all of those sentences include the National League, and so I think it still has value. However, this has really dawned on me, the more I've given it thought, is that we may never see National League baseball again.
In terms of the DH, not in terms of the universal DH being added?
Yeah. I mean, I think that how baseball comes out of this, whether it's like a vacuum-packed season, because it's played in a bubble and because it's reduced to the, you know, the most minimal games possible, that, you know, and you have 40-man rosters, that the DH is going to be a part of that. And it's only natural that something that has already started to teeter and fall, just as we've chronicled. I mean, basically I've written about that for the last 10 years, that people needed to brace for this inevitability. I think it just accelerates that. And I was thinking a lot about this past week, that when baseball ended about a month ago, as we record this here on April 17th, I headed home from Florida, you did too, We had our Cannonball Run race home that I won from Florida a month ago today. Not that I keep score or anything, but when we saw baseball played, that may be the last time we saw NL baseball as we know it.
Well, I'll just say this. I think a lot of the tweaks that could come to a shortened season would be temporary in terms of, you know, what we could see with the 7-inning doubleheaders and the things of that nature. I don't think that the DH, if it does come, will be taken away. I think that would be something that sticks.
But I'll also throw in, too, that if they rearrange the divisions and you start seeing teams play each other more often, that's coming, too. That eventually Major League Baseball is just going to have everybody play everybody and balance the schedule that way. And so this notion, like you know, looking back, this past week was Jackie Robinson Day, and the Cardinals would have been at Dodger Stadium. Granted, a ballpark that Jackie Robinson never played, but it would have been really fascinating. You know, he would have turned 101 this year. And you have, you know, the Cardinals all wearing 42 and the Dodgers wearing 42. And I was really looking forward to seeing that moment, you know, because these are the two teams that have, again, defined the National League. They are the defining National League rivalry for the past 80 years. The Cardinals dominated the 40s. You know, the Dodgers responded and dominated the next decade, and back and forth they've gone. You know, Ozzie Smith's go crazy, folks, home run, Clayton Kershaw's postseason struggles. These are two National League franchises that define each other. One of them being the franchise that for still a long time in baseball history was the westernmost team, and then the team that went farther west than anybody could go to get out there to those markets. So, I mean, they just have come to define each other in so many ways. And, you know, I was looking at this, and Jackie Robinson, you know, only played in, what, 8 ballparks, you know?
Yeah.
Like, in regular seasons. He had, you know, there were 8 teams, and, you know, he's faced these opponents over and over and over again. But he wasn't playing the Yankees, who were just down the street, unless it was October. He wasn't playing the Red Sox, unless, again, it was in the World Series. You know, he didn't go to Fenway Park, right? Tiger Stadium, where's that? Mm-hmm. You know, and I just, you know, that sort of, you know, I'll use it, that sort of isolation from the other league was part of what defined baseball and allowed rivalries to flourish and allowed teams like the Dodgers and the Cardinals to just overlap and intertwine and, like I said, define each other decade after decade after decade because they had shared history. And on the horizon here, you're going to see, you know, one fewer Cubs-Cardinals series, maybe less Dodgers-Cardinals, and maybe more Twins-Cardinals, maybe more Mariners-Cardinals, maybe you know, that really interesting Rays-Cardinals rivalry will be something that is played out every year. You know, I just I'm starting to think that, you know, this stoppage is going to lead to an accelerated change, one that we'll look back on and say, yeah, you know, the two leagues, the American League or the National League or whichever league you identify with, we saw the last of it, and that the game is going to be more reflective of an American League style than an NL style.
I think that's probably true. I mean, I think when it comes to the history of the game, we will probably look at this stopping point as a pretty significant line of demarcation from the evolution of the game, right? And it's been becoming more universal. I mean, shoot, we woke up this morning and we watched a baseball game in Taiwan. So, yeah, baseball. And I guess the best thing to say is if there is something that you don't want to see change, then now is the time to speak up, and it might not be listened to, but you know, go down fighting. If you have a cause, if you're determined not to see, you know, these things happen, then everybody better speak up. I mean, we all have our pet projects. We all have things that bother us, things that don't about the game. That's part of what makes it great. Will it be a worse game? I don't necessarily think so, but I certainly understand what tradition means to the game, and I understand people who are unhappy when that tradition is watered down. And I think that it all depends on where you decide to do it. But you're right. This is going to give the tinkerers the platform they didn't want because of the situation, but the platform they wanted in terms of being able to suggest wild changes without much resistance. Because if the labeling for the tinkering is, well, it's better than no baseball, then fans and players will probably be willing to put up with a lot more than they normally would.
Yeah. Well, whatever baseball looks like, I hope that you and I are there to cover it. I enjoy covering baseball. I enjoy covering baseball with you. I enjoy covering baseball for the Post-Dispatch, and I know that it will look different. I just hope that there's a seat for me in the press box and a deadline for me to meet. That's what I hope.
It might really look different if you don't get some Clippers soon.
I might. You're right. I might. Well, hopefully I'll have a chance. Well. Yeah, I'm gonna try to find some Clippers. You're right, and in the meantime, though, we'll continue to provide content and coverage. Even while the games don't go on, the coverage still does at STLToday.com and in the pages of the Post Dispatch. You can find all of Ben Fredrickson's work, the chat that he does once a week, the podcast he hosts with Dave Matter about Mizzou sports, and of course, the best podcast in baseball at STLToday.com. The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design of St. Louis. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BYDESIGN. Closets by Design of St. Louis, the official sponsor of the weekly best podcast in baseball. The podcast is available anywhere you get your podcast now. We've really upgraded there just in time to reach out and give you coverage during this time without sports. You can, of course, find it on iTunes, where you can find individual episodes, download individual episodes. You can rate and review it or subscribe. Please subscribe. The subscriptions make the sponsorship possible, and the sponsorship makes this podcast possible. I do go and read the reviews, including the one that said he could only hear Tom Timmerman. I got to be honest, I listened to that podcast various points in the podcast at least 10 times, and I heard all three of us talking. So I don't know what to do, but I do read the reviews, so that does prove it, and I do try to act upon it. A programming note, however, Ben, is there won't be a best podcast in baseball next week. I have to take a forced hiatus. Is that what we call it? Is that what it is?
I guess so. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I'm not. I won't be able to host the best podcast in baseball next week, and I won't be able to code it, and I won't be able to participate in it. So there won't be a best podcast in baseball next week, but we'll return with episodes the next week. So that final week of April will return. So from April 19th through April 25th. I know these dates because those are the dates where I won't be able to do much. So there we are. So I wanted everybody to know that, and look forward to returning to the best podcast in baseball. I look forward to trying to talk you into being on the show again.
Just not for my 2 weeks.
Right, right, yeah. So you gave away the spoiler. There's going to be 2 weeks it's not 2 weeks in a row. I hope not. We're kind of going through this together. We'll do the podcast when we're permitted to do the podcast every week possible. How about that?
Sounds good.
All right. So for the best podcast in baseball, brought to you Closets by Design, and for St. Louis Post-Dispatch sports columnist Ben Fredrickson, I am St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould. I will talk to you within a fortnight. Not the game, but within the actual span of a fortnight.
Is this an esports podcast now?
Well, have you watched any of those?
No. I am writing a column about esports, though.
Cool.
Deep tease.
What esports?
The up and coming Nick Saban of esports coaching is a St. Louisan in our midst.
Ooh, can I tease that?
Yeah.
Cool. All right.
Coming to a post near you next week at some point.
I find that fascinating.
All right. I'm glad you're interested. I'll try not to screw it up.
No, you never do. You're a good writer.
All right, I got to run. All right,
hold on a second. Let me stop this recording and then load it.